Today we're going to discuss the last four verses of the second chapter, Divinity and Divine Service of the first canto, and the text 30 to 34. They speak about, Sutta Goswami is explaining here about Vasudeva, Krishna. He manifests the three material worlds in his three Vishnu features. Before we get into the verses and understanding of Srila Prabhupada's purports, we will chant the invocation and the obeisances prayers. So let's all chant together the shlokas. Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam udirayet nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. And we also offer our obeisance to Srila Prabhupada. Because of him, we are able to understand, read Srimad Bhagavatam and participate in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Getting into what we've discussed so far in Chapter 2, I just thought we'll do a quick summary, just go through very quickly about what we've discussed so far, because these are the last verses, so we'll be able to connect everything. So, in the beginning, Sutta Goswami begins, in the first chapter, the sages had asked six questions to Sutta Goswami, the sages at Naimisharanya, and in chapter 2, Sutta Goswami begins answering the questions of the sages, and then he goes on to explain the ultimate good for all people. Now, these sections were covered by Rasika Mataji in her classes, and then we also had only bhakti is to be gained through the performance of our duties, and the progression in bhakti, 14 stages, this was covered by Vishakha Leela Mataji, and part of the 14 stages was also covered by Vrajabhakti Mataji in her classes. I'm just letting you know the speaker so you can connect what was being spoken in their classes. And then in the last class by Nitya Gaurang Prabhu, there was a discussion on who is the object of worship. We understand what is the ultimate good, what is to be achieved by the performance of our duties, what is the progression of bhakti, but who is the object of our worship? And then there was discussion on demigods and different forms of the Lord, and then ultimately it ended with the verses Vasudeva, Para Veda, Para Makha, Para Yoga, Param Gatim. You know, I think there are 16, eight such explanations. So again, it is what is to be achieved by all the different things that we do. Who is the object of all of those things? And it was explained that it was Vasudev. So the last section was dealing with only Vasudeva or Krishna is the object of our worship, and why he should be, and only he should be served. So now we're moving on to the next section, text 30 to 34, the concluding verses of the second chapter. And they deal with the answer to the third and fourth questions of the sages. Now how are the third and fourth questions of the sages connected with only Vasudeva Krishna is the object of our worship and only he should be served is explained in Srila Prabhupada's purports and also in by Burijan Prabhu in great depth in his book, Unveiling His Lotus Feet, and also in his lecture. So we will see that through the bulk of the discussion today. So what was the fourth question by the sages? So that is being discussed in text 30 to 33. It's on the slide, but if anyone wants to attempt saying it. Yeah, why did he... Why? What reason he appeared? Yeah, so as I summarize in green below, it says the sages are very eager to hear about the Lord and his interaction in the material world. Now, as we read it, they're very, very eager to hear, please therefore speak to us who are eager to hear about the adventures he performs in his various incarnations. Now, the understanding of what adventures and incarnations means here is being explained at two levels by different acharyas, and we will just very quickly see that explanation and then see which of those is Sutta Goswami satisfying in the following verses. So we have Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He explains, this thing that the Lord and his interaction in the material world, he explains that as a sages to desire to hear about the various incarnations of the Lord, the various pastimes of the Lord. And that is covered in chapter 3 and the rest of Srimad Bhagavatam. So when the Lord is performing pastimes, when he is coming into the material world, he is interacting with the material world. So this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, that this is to hear about the Lord's various incarnations and the different forms of his incarnations. But however, Srila Jiva Goswami states that this specifically refers to the Lord's creation pastimes. Now pastimes could be Leela. Pastimes are also about the creation past tense. Like, why has he created this entire cosmos, this material world? For what purpose? And that itself is a leela of the Lord. So Jiva Goswami is saying that that interaction with the material world, you know, the creation pastime where he's interacting with the material energy, he's manipulating them, he's creating the material energy, he's manipulating it. That specifically refers to the Lord's creation pastimes. And if we understand the question from through the lens of Jiva Goswami, we will see that Sutta Goswami is trying to answer at that level. He's answering the sage's question at that level. So today we're going to cover text 30 to 34. So text 30 to 33 talks about the fourth question of the sages, which is about the Lord's creation pastimes. And text 34 answers the third question, which we will get into once we get into that verse. So now we will see what the theme...
Do you have a presentation on a stick?
I don't have it, Prabhu.
You can copy it.
Okay.
It helps me.
Okay, so we were discussing what is covered in text 30 to 33. It's specifically about the Lord's creation pastimes. And we will get into the individual verses, but the theme of the verses is how Krishna creates and maintains the material world through his three Purusha avatars, which are Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, and Shirodakshayi Vishnu. So that is the Lord's interaction with the material energy. That is what Jiva Goswami is saying. That is what the sages are asking. So the Lord's creation pastimes are the interaction with the material energy, and the forms he takes, the avatar, the Purusha avatar, is the agency through which that happens. So we will now get into the first verse, and let's all chant the verse together, and I'll read the translation myself. Sa evedam sa sarjagre bhagavan atma mayaya Sad asad rupaya cha shau guna maya guno vibhu. So, in the beginning of the material creation, that absolute personality of Godhead, Vasudev, in his transcendental position, created the energies of cause and effect by his own internal energy. So, here again, linking back to the creation pastimes, and linking back to what Nitya Gaurang Prabhu's class was about, he was discussing about Vasudev being the object of our worship. So here, as we see in the verse, you have the Sanskrit word being used as Bhagavan. And then Prabhupada is saying absolute personality of Godhead and Vasudev. So the essence is that Bhagavan, that absolute personality of Godhead, that Vasudev, is not different from the object of our worship. So the same, that Supreme Lord is the one who is doing all these creation pastimes. And he is the object of our worship. He is non-different from Krishna. And then he comes in his form as Karana Dakshayi Vishnu, which is Mahavishnu. As you can see the picture on top. He, as Mahavishnu, the same Krishna as Mahavishnu, is performing his pastime, the creation pastimes, as his Purusha Avatar Mahavishnu. And he still remains in his transcendental position. So let's make note of the three, some of the texts has been... is in the red font, and that forms the bulk of Srila Prabhupada's purport. So just keep these merged in mind: material creation, Vasudev, transcendental position, and we will get into that in the next slide. So Vasudev referred to in Vasudeva Paraveda, that verse, is the same Vasudev who acts as Vishnu, the source of material worlds, because so far that was not established in the second chapter. But now Sutta Goswami through this verse is establishing that. And then aguna, or transcendental, we just saw that highlighted in red in the text. So he, in spite of his interaction with the material energy, with matter, he still remains transcendental. Which means what? He's extraordinary, right? We can't understand him as ourselves. We are interacting with matter all the time, and we are in this covered, dormant stage. We're covered with this material body. A lot of our aspects of us as a soul are dormant in this material body. But that's not how the Lord is. The Lord still remains transcendental in spite of his interaction with the material energy. Because he is the creator of the material energy as well. So how can he come under that cover? None of his potencies are dormant in that stage. He is fully himself in spite of that. And then we have the word idam. So we read Sa Evedam. So that is this, which refers to the entirety of the material creation. It doesn't refer just to the temple where the Lord is. Or it just doesn't refer to the building, you know, the various buildings or the city or the planet or the universe, one planetary system. It refers to the entirety of the material creation, right? So it's not just one universe. It's so many millions and zillions of universes that are coming out from the Lord. So this refers to the entirety of the material creation, which means he's extraordinary, right? If we see someone who's created a magnificent skyscraper with perfect elevation and, you know, great foundation and earthquake resistant and etc., you know, we realize that this is, wow, he's such a wonderful person, you know, what brain power, you know, he's amazing. Like, we recently visited Disneyland, like, the last weekend. We'd gone on a trip to LA, and then we were like, wow, you know, Walt Disney is like, he's done something. But then, if we can admire that small place, Disneyland, you know, how wonderful is our Lord, you know? What, I mean, can we even conceive that? No, we can't. We're like the frog in the well. So, this entirety of material world, it begins with the Mahat Tattva and extends to Brahma. So, Mahat Tattva seems like a mass, but he then agitates that and he creates such wonderful things out of it just for our enjoyment. So, these were the main points in that text 30. Talks about Mahavishnu, Karanadakshay Vishnu, and the Lord's interaction with material energy, and he still remains transcendental in spite of that. So, moving on to the next verse, which is 1331. We'll follow the same pattern. We'll all say the shloka together and I'll read the translation by myself. Taya vilashiteshveshu guneshu gunavaniva anta pravishta abhati vignanena vijramabhita. So after creating the material substance, he created the material substance. We just heard about that in the previous verse. So after creating that material substance, the Lord Vasudev, the same Vasudev, Bhagwan, Vishnu, Krishna, Absolute Personality of Godhead, same person, expands himself and enters into it. So he's expanding himself and entering into it. And although he is within the material modes of nature and appears to be one of the created beings, he is fully enlightened in his transcendental position. So not only he's created the material substance and he's agitated it and so many various universes are coming out. But he is also expanding himself and entering into it. And again, the emphasis is, he remains fully enlightened in his transcendental position. His potencies are not dormant because of the covering of matter. No. He is the creator of matter. His potencies are not dormant, unlike us. He still remains fully enlightened in his transcendental position. So again, expanding the bulk of Srila Prabhupada's purport is about those three things that we highlighted in the translation. So what does expand himself mean? He's expanding himself as from Karanadakshay Vishnu, which is Mahavishnu, the one who from whom the various universes came out. He's expanding himself as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. So he's not becoming detached by just creating the various universes. He's also expanding himself as many, many Vishnus and entering into each universe as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And then he enters into it. Now that is, the understanding is again presented at two levels. What is the entering? So he's entering each universe as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, but then he's also entering into the heart of every living entity as Shirodakshay Vishnu, and he's also pervading all matter. Again, the entering is, he's pervading all matter and he's entering into the heart of every living entity. So Shirodakshay Vishnu. So we discussed Karanadakshay Vishnu, who's Mahavishnu, from whom all the universes come out. He enters into each universe as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and he enters into the heart of every living entity, and he pervades all matter as Shirodakshay Vishnu. So where does Shirodakshay Vishnu reside? Shvetadeep or in the Shir Sagar? Same thing. So he resides in Shvetadeep in Shir Sagar, which is in each universe. So in each universe, he's not just become detached by just creating the universes. He's there to maintain it as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and then he's there in our heart to help us enjoy, permit, Upadrishta Anumanta, to help us enjoy as Shirodakshay Vishnu. So this is the mercy of the Lord. And then looking at his transcendental nature again, why is this being repeatedly stressed? So Purijan Prabhu is explaining that in his book, Unveiling His Lotus Feet, and we will see that explanation here. So He remains transcendental despite the fact he appears to be in matter. So here we have Krishna, and he's creating all these universes. He's the unlimited source. He's the source of unlimited Vishnus. Imagine the number of universes that are there. He's entering each universe as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. Then within in each universe, you have so many different living entities, so many of them. And he's entering into the heart of each living entity. And he's not only entering the heart of each living entity in one universe, he's doing that for all the universes. And then he's pervading the matter in all universes, right? We hear God is everywhere. He's there in each and every atom. So what does that make us feel? That Krishna is extraordinary. He is God, right? As we can see in the green section below. He is an extraordinary person. He is a person, but he is an extraordinary person beyond compare. There is no comparison. He is God. But on the other hand, we also see Krishna in his Vrindavan pastimes. We see him wrestling with the gopas. We see him dancing with the gopis. And like the hit thing that's happening right now in Seattle is watching little Krishna. You know, you see him stealing butter from Mother Padmavati. You see him fighting with Madhu Mangal. Or you see him, interacting with Dadi Loba. Or you see him talking with the demons. You know, all those pastimes. And then you see that these are all very ordinary human activities, you know. And how do I reconcile these two things, you know, that he is Krishna, he is extraordinary. But then I see these pastimes and he's doing all these ordinary human-like activities. And as you can see the face of the lady there, it's like, it's very, very bewildering. You know, it's extremely bewildering. And Bhurijan Prabhu says that it is very bewildering, especially for the person who is not taken to the process of self-realization and who is not hearing from the disciplic succession. So unless we have that protection, we will be bewildered. And what is that bewilderment? If we are bewildered, we cannot understand Krishna's pastimes. You know, if I just know Krishna and the Vrindavan pastimes and, you know, him killing the demons, I would think that, okay, he's like a much more better human being than I am. He's like Obama and I can also get to his position. You know, I can aspire to be president sometime. I can also feel like that about Krishna when I just see that, you know, when I just see that aspect of him, as many of the demons were bewildered, or many of the part, you know, what we hear in the Leela, many people were bewildered like that, you know, that, okay, he's just a little bit better than me and I can also get there, you know, I can also steal butter, I can also dance with the gopi, I can do it right now, you know, I don't have to go to Vrindavan, I can do it right here, I don't need that whole setting, I can do it right now, you know, and I can also, you know, create some demons and I go to Walt Disney, right? I mean, I go to Disneyland and I am also, you know, playing with certain things. I can ask him to create some demon for me and I can also be a part of that ride, you know. So, if we are in that conception, we cannot understand his Vrindavan pastime because we will feel that, oh, I can also be God. But what Bhurijan Prabhu is saying, that unless we are self-realized or we are on the path of self-realization, under the guidance of the disciplic succession, we are going to be bewildered, like that lady there. So, summarizing that, so this understanding is foundational to understanding Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. That those pastimes are also extraordinary. There is a certain element in that pastime which we will not understand if we don't understand how extraordinary Krishna is. Now the second point is, if we just see, okay, let's say it like this, you know, when Gajendra's foot was in the mouth of the crocodile, and he was struggling for like thousand years, you know. He was struggling for 1,000 years and he was trying to use all his might to get out of that trap. And then finally, because of his pious activity, because of, you know, the Lord's mercy on him, he's able to remember his previous life and the prayers that he had. And then you see that the next chapter is full of, you know, all the prayers that he's saying. And then, you know, when you read that, you feel like, you know, the first prayer should be that, hey, you know, come on, save me. This is like too much for me. I'm struggling and, you know, please save me. That's what you would read, but then when you read, that's what you would want to see there. But then when we read the pastime, we see that the first 5-6 verses are full of glorification. Oh my Lord, you're so extraordinary. I am such an ordinary person, you know. You are this, you are that, you're the creator, you're so merciful. You are there, here and you're over there, you know, like so many different places. The first 5-6 verses are such glorification. And then when I was reading that, I was thinking that, I understand this theoretically. I know he's extraordinary. I understand what all Gajendra is saying over here. But then why do I keep reading that repeatedly in Srimad Bhagavatam? You know, why is that hammered all the time? Why is that hammered all the time? Because I am also in that bewildered stage. Because I do understand Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes and I understand he's extraordinary. But the realization is absent. And because that is absent, when I am in trouble like Gajendra, I am not taking shelter of the Lord because I feel that I can still do it. I don't realize Krishna's greatness, that I have to take His shelter, that He is the extraordinary person. It's because I am bewildered, I don't understand that, I don't take shelter. And that is what we need to understand, that how small we are and who the real controller is. Else we are considering Him as an ordinary human being. So it's just like when you're not chanting properly, you know, I heard from one senior devotee that we're committing the offense of to underestimate the glories of chanting the holy name of the Lord. You know, if you're not chanting properly, that's an offense. So similarly, if we're not taking shelter, if we're not real, you know, not understanding that who is the real shelter. You know, Gajendra at least understood after 1,000 years. But what is my position? You know, I need to keep reading these things repeatedly to come out of this bewilderment, you know. I need to understand how small I am and who the real controller is. Else, I'm considering Him as an ordinary human being. I'm not realizing Him in full. I'm not understanding how great my Supreme Lord is. So we covered 3 points here. We covered, getting back to the verse, we covered how He expands Himself and enters into it. We can see the picture there, Garbhodakshai Vishnu and Shirodakshai Vishnu. And how He is fully enlightened in His transcendental position. So in spite of all this creation, He is fully transcendental. He is not like me. He is not an ordinary person. If I steal butter, I am not in that transcendental position. He is fully enlightened in His transcendental position. So we already discussed Karanadakshai Vishnu, and now we discuss Garbhodakshai Vishnu and Shirodakshai Vishnu. Now there is some more elaboration on the functions of the super soul. And that's what we will see in this verse. We can chant the verse together. Yatha hya avito vahnir darushveke svayonishu naneva bhati vishvatma bhuteshu cha tatha puman. The Lord as super soul pervades all things. We just read that in the previous verse. Just as fire permeates wood. And so He appears to be of many varieties. Though He is the absolute one without a second. Right? He is the absolute one without a second. No one can be as extraordinary as He is. You know, however much I may want to be the Lord of the service I'm doing, the Lord of the congregation I am in, or whatever. He is the absolute one without a second, and I should not even try to do that. I have that propensity. I should pray to the Lord to help me overcome that propensity. And just like fire permeates wood. Now when you see something, you see, you know, like in the winter, a lot of people have firewood and then they light the fire and you see that the fire is permeating all the wood.